Hello, everybody, and welcome to our NEPC Foundations Content and Curriculum Call. So just, you know, for the sake of those of you who are new or relatively new, or even for the sake of those of you who have been with us for a while, we decided at the beginning of this year to create calls we called the Content and Curriculum Calls, because people were feeling intimidated a little bit by asking questions like about the content, about the lessons. Okay, sorry, the dog barked. About things like that on calls where people are bringing cases and talking about clients. And seriously, anything really goes, but then we decided, okay, we'll have these calls which are strictly devoted to answering questions about content, like, you know, what does it mean when you say this, and what about this protocol, and what about that? So that's what these calls are about. For the content in the foundations, we're going to be adding, starting in January, we'll be adding the content related to the mastery program. And those of you who are in mastery get access to both of them, and those of you who are in foundations will just get access to the one for foundations. So you can ask questions about your content, and then, you know, it's not going over your head because people are asking you things, asking about things that you don't know about. So that's what the purpose of this call is. That said, typically we're able to handle those calls, those questions pretty quickly, and then usually we end up having this be one of those free-for-all calls where you ask whatever you want about cases, about your own cases, about a lab. The only thing we won't do on these calls is a full-blown case study where you submit the person's case and then we go through it, because those take a good half hour to do a good job to really make it a great teaching experience for you and a good experience. So usually if we have a case study call, we just do a couple of those in an evening. We do have, yesterday we had our clinical mastery of the digestive system case study call, and on that one, several people, we had two cases that had been submitted, and then we did Q&A, and it turns out that April had submitted hers, but it somehow didn't come to our awareness. So we have April's case from that, which is not a full case, we're just going to look at her stool test. And then, well, we can do that at the end of this, but I want to honor the content and the intent of this call and actually answer your questions about content and curriculum. So for those of you who are brand new, I know Ava said she went through modules 1 and 2 already. Congratulations. And I guess you were trying to take your test at the end, and Lynn reported back that she hadn't finished setting people up. So let me tell you a little bit about the quizzes and the tests. So the first 12 modules, the foundations, are using something called Exam Professor, and it's a separate login, and it has the questions and you take your test there. What we've recently done over the last couple months is we installed a new piece of software plugin onto our site, our membership site, called Progress Ally. And what that does is allows us to put the test right there on our own site. And what that does is means is that Lynn doesn't have to manually add everybody to of the test as soon as it's open to them. So that's an exciting piece. Lynn's going to be happy about that. So all the mastery modules are going to be done there. And then as time permits, you know, when my team gets some slack time, we're going to have them go back and just copy-paste the questions from the exam professor into Progress Ally, and we will be able to not have to, there won't be a delay. So let me just say, I'm going to mute people as you come in. And that way, we'll keep it quiet. Okay, cool. And know that on this Zoom platform, you've got the ability to mute and unmute yourself. So if you have a question, like, and I don't see your hand up, because I know there's a way to put hands up, and I'm not sure what it is on Zoom. But I don't see your hand up, I can still get your question, because you can just open up your line and say, hey, you know, hey, Val, what about me? I have a question. So feel free to do that. Just, of course, use typical common courtesy, don't interrupt somebody in the middle of speaking, wait till there's a natural stop, and then, you know, say, hey, I have a question next. So we're happy to do that. We can also do video on this. I'm not wanting to do video because I'm in my running clothes with mess. I've been combing my hair in hours, or probably since this morning, and I've gone running. So I'm probably not opening up my line, but I think that for future reference, when we get more into using the platform on a regular basis, I think it's kind of nice to see everybody when they're speaking, so we'll see how that goes. So first of all, Lynn, can you remind us how to raise our hands on Zoom? I know you're the one that told me.
side should, this little sidebar should come out, and one of the options is raise hand. You can click mute me or raise hand.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, it's a...
Well, you're the host. You got the superpowers anyway.
I get the superpowers. Okay, I should have looked at it the other day when you took my superpowers from me. Yeah, I get to put attendee on hold, I get to rename, I get to make a call, I can change people's names. Ooh, that's cool. Ah, how fun. I can make somebody a host, and I can ask you to start your video. So I can't turn your video camera on, so if you're, you know, just got out of the shower and you don't want anybody to see you, I can't force you to be seen, but I can say, hey, Karina, turn on your video. And if you say yes, great. If you say no, that's great, too. All right. So we've got Drina, Eva, Laura, Lynn, Susan, Vanessa, April, and somebody who's on as backup pin, and I'm going to find out who that is. So if you logged in and dialed into Maestro and you're not April, please say, tell me who you are, who's on backup pin. Hello? Give a mystery drop-in guest. Probably your line is muted, so if you want to unmute on your end, you can tell me. Okay.
Dr. Rita Marie?
Yeah. Hi.
Hi, it's Thea. It's Cynthia.
Oh, Cynthia. Thea. Hi. Great.
Right. Hi. I tried that first number, and it wouldn't take, so I use this one. Is that a problem?
No, it's not a problem at all, actually. We were just talking about that, Lynn and I, before the call, that we think there might have been a problem where some people got their, you got assigned your code, but it didn't tell Maestro, so that might be why. So that's why we always put a backup in, because just
oh,
so that
good.
Anything messed up. Plus, somebody said that they tried to, who was it? I think it was Susan said there. She saw a message from Maestro that they were having some trouble with some of the lines, so that might have been it. So yeah.
Well, it worked out. Worked out.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect.
Awesome.
All right. So, questions. So raise your hand if you have a question about anything at all content-wise, anything at all. Like, you know, what the heck does that mean when you said this, or I was confused when you said that, or just tell me more about this or that or whatever. So raise your hand or just open your line and say, hey, this is your name, and ask your question. We don't have any of that. Okay. So for new folks, you've got people who just signed up within the last few weeks. You've got two modules open to you. You've got the overall introduction, which is really, you know, it sounds like it's just an overview and introduction, but it is an in-depth module because that's where we teach you all about hypothalamus and all its hormones and the pituitary and all the other glands. And we pretty much give you an overview of all the glands and the endocrine hormones, well, not all of them, just the main ones. And we've found that even people who come in and they've been, you know, MDs for 12 years have said, wow, it was a great review and I learned a lot of stuff that I didn't really remember picking up in medical school. Because we're always trying to make it practical, right? Like, what does this mean? What does this mean clinically? What are you going to see people and how are you going to be starting to say, this person might have this issue? That's the eye-opener of all this. And then the second one is on cellular metabolism and really, you know, the mitochondria and the energy production. And I wanted to start with that because I think it's so important for us to know where people's energy comes from. And a lot of people don't. A lot of people are doing health coaching or they're nutritionists or even some PAs and nurses and all don't really get the whole process of mitochondria and how it works. But more than that is what are the nutrients that are important for us to help people to balance so that they have good cellular energy. And a lot of times, you know, we see people coming in and they say they're tired and, you know, we think about big things that they can do, like obviously sleep more and eat better and up their B vitamins and all, but really some of people actually have some mitochondrial dysfunction and the dysfunction is due to the lack of nutrients to support it. So I wanted you to understand that whole process. On the next module that you'll be getting, probably within, my guess is within the next few days to a week, is the macronutrients module. That's a much larger module. That's where we talk about fats and carbohydrates and protein and water and all of how that works in the body. and help you to see how those things are absorbed and what they all mean and what does it really mean when somebody says it's omega-6 versus omega-3 and what are the differences between the fats. That's a heftier module. It's probably about 5 or 6 hours worth of video. So take your time going through it, and from there on in, we give you modules once a month. Every now and then, somebody gets like ahead, and they say, look, I have plenty of free time. I'm on vacation, and I thought, that what better to do than to catch up on these modules? I finished module 3. Can you open module 4? So as long as you're up to date on your tuition and all, yeah, we can do that. So just let us know, and we'll make sure that that happens for you. And what else? What else should you know about that? On Monday, this coming Monday, no, next Monday, the Monday after Thanksgiving, Lynn is going to be doing a more in-depth orientation. Last week I did an orientation, which was a lot about us meeting all the new folks and giving a tour of the site, but an overall tour. Lynn is going to go through much more depth and do an in-depth. There are some recordings of that, so if you're like a little confused about where to find various things on this site, no worries. It's a large site, and there's tons of resources there. And Lynn will make it clear on that call. So if you can't make the call live or you don't want to wait until then, there are a couple of recordings if you go to the recordings page. And across the top, there's a link that says recordings, and on there you should be able to find some of the orientations. The very first one we did was where I think there's a video recording of it too, and some of the others are more recent, have video recordings as well. So you're welcome to go there. So questions, comments about what you're learning so far. And the other thing is, if ever, you get caught up, like you've gone through Module 1 and then Module 2 and you're caught up to Module 3 and Module 4 hasn't been released to you yet, know that there's a ton of other information there for you to be learning and growing with. There's the Advanced Clinical Resources, where we have over a dozen different recordings from people who are functional medicine practitioners who are out there in the trenches doing it. And so that means there's probably 15 to 18 hours worth of video there that you can watch and learn from. And almost all the time we have slides and a downloadable slide presentation. Some of them we just did Q&As because they didn't want to do slides, and that's fine too. You'll learn a lot. And a few of them that got really hefty and in-depth that I couldn't keep up with taking notes on, like Jeffrey Bland, we actually have a transcript. Jeffrey Bland talked to us for over 2 hours, I think. I mean, he was so generous with his time, and, he's like, forerunner in functional medicine, so he has so much to share. So all of those are out there. So if you ever caught up on your modules, rather than feeling like, oh, give me the next one, really explore the site, because there's that. And then on the business side, if you're looking to just really get going on getting your business off the ground, there's things on enrollment conversations, picking a niche, getting programs instead of just offering one-on-one services on a as-needed basis, and much more practical ways of doing that. So there's a ton of stuff there. Plus, you've got 4 years of Shine if you haven't been to them, and there's awesome information there and lots of great handouts. So if ever you're needing, like, oh, I've got somebody coming in and I want to, get up to speed on thyroid, you can go to the 2014 Shine presentations there. And we did a whole thing on the HPAT axis, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal thyroid axis, and there's a ton of great information to get started there. The other thing that you have to keep you going on content-wise is the consumer programs. Now, those are programs I developed for teaching my patients, my clients, the ins and outs of their various conditions. Because I believe that as an owner of a body, we do so much better in taking care of ourselves, and they're going to follow through on your recommendations if they understand them. And you don't have the time, and they probably don't have enough money to pay you to teach them all this stuff one-on-one. It's not practical. I used to do it. I charge them $75, and 3 hours later, I did teach them everything they needed to know, and then I was like, why don't I put all this on tape, right? So now we have lots and lots of that, and we have very organized modules. So if you're in Foundations, you have access to the blood sugar balancing and the digestive pieces there. And if you're in Mastery, you also have access to the adrenal and the thyroid and the nutrigenomics on that side. So you can actually go through those programs, watch those videos, get a sense of what I'm teaching them, and that can teach you a lot too, especially if you're using yourself as a case to help you solve it. So that's really helpful. As far as the nutrigenomics go, we haven't hit that module yet in our foundation, our mastery program here. We have the stuff we created for my very first practitioner training, and between that and what we have for the consumers, we have over 20 hours. And that's a big topic. So, again, if you're looking for, you know, something extra to learn, I would highly recommend that you go over to the consumer side by clicking on the link on the right-hand side of your menu. It says Vibrant Living Members Site. And then just go explore some of the stuff we put there for you. The other thing we put there for you, hopefully it's there at this point. I talked to Stacy the other day about getting it out there, so we'll make sure. But if not, it will be there soon, is something called our Foundations module from our Energy Recharge year-long coaching program. And in there, we go through all of the seven pillars of health so you can help people have a strong foundation. So we give you resources there that you can use for stress, for sleep, a whole bunch of sleep herbs and various techniques for helping them get a better night's sleep. And we also have things on fitness, and we have some really nice videos that we put up of people doing fitness. We have some good environmental things. We have things on fun, and we have things on, of course, nutrition. We have tons of stuff out there. So lots of stuff for you to explore and bring questions to any of these calls. So if you don't already have that Foundations, I'm going to make sure that that gets opened up to everybody very soon. So I'm going to take a deep breath, grab some water. And if there's no questions yet right about content, then what I'm going to do is pull up April's rule test and put her on speak. April, hi.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Not very well, so go ahead and let the volume up. Oh, the volume was low. Go ahead and speak again, April.
Can you hear me a little bit better?
Yes. Hear you better.
Okay.
Let me open up your.
Okay. Can you hear me better?
Oh, much better. Yeah. Much better.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to open up your case, and then I'm going to display it, and then we can go through it. And this could be a really good learning experience for everybody.
Okay. I'm really nervous.
Nervous about what? Tell me what you're nervous about.
I think it's just. I have really, this is a really personal situation, and I'm just nervous.
So okay.
But I'm totally open to it. I know it will teach a lot of people, and I'm open to that. And I've learned a lot from it for myself.
Right.
And so I'm open to this.
I think that's what we might start with, is what you've learned and what you're analyzing, because that's a way that you can actually verbalize and then learn to,
right.
You know, get better and better at it, which is what it takes, right? Okay, so
yes.
You had the priority and you had the comprehensive. So let me open that, and then I'll share the screen once I have it open. I'm going to get both of them open, so let me go back. That's why I don't like doing it this way, Lynn. I wanted the actual file, because I can only open them one at a time. I'm on the web. I can't open them multiple at a time. Back here. Close it. I'm going to click the link again. Try this again. I'm going to see if it will let me open multiple windows. I would love to open multiple. Open. Nope. Let me download it. Lynn, if you can upload the files, I have the comprehensive. Can you open the H. pylori one and just upload it to the Skype so that I have it? Okay, so I've got this one. Let me pull this out to another window and then start with that. And hey, actually, the H. pylori is just positive or negative. So what was it? What did the H. pylori say?
The H. pylori was negative for everything except for the only bacteria that showed up positive for that it had in my gut tract was the Citrinobacteria friandrii.
Okay. So you actually did more than just the H. pylori. You did the full with it. Okay,
yeah.
So I do want to see it. I do need to see it because I want to see some of the other numbers. Let me see if I can open this one in a whole new. It'll open in a separate window. It does. Oh, good. Okay. I think I figured out how to do this and get both of them open at the same time and be able to flip back and forth. All right. So you also had in there, this will open in the other third window. Okay, I figured it out. Got it open, and now I'm going to share. I'm sorry we didn't see this yesterday. It was.
No, it's okay.
It just didn't show up, and sometimes that happens with that software that we use. Okay, so I've got that. I'm going to start here. Give us a pretty good description. So I'm going to share the screen, and you guys can all let me know if you can see it. So share screen, and I'm going to go to, there we go. Okay, fantastic. Oh, Elaine is on. Hi. You can't see me, but I can see you. All right, so. Can you guys see my screen?
Yes, we can.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so is it okay if I read this out loud? April, are you feeling okay
about
this? Okay.
No, go ahead.
Okay, so April, and how old are you, April?
I'm 33.
So about a year and a half ago, she's pregnant with her son and moved across the country into a home with a well. The well shut off. As they had a filtration problem, and the landlord had to come by to tell them because they didn't have anybody come by for at least a week to fix the issue. He made it possible for us to still use the water for showering, washing dishes, and washing clothes. It was also at this time that we decided to use a dairy down the road for all our dairy needs. It was closer to home than the grocery store, and it seemed to work. I want to be clear that I was serious about my diet up until the pregnancy. I was gluten-free, dairy-free, peanut-free. I'd only given in here and there for a bit of ice cream as I felt it was sad to deprive my baby of ice cream. So I indulged a bit. I never felt good afterwards. Okay. That's a clue, right? We know that, right?
Yeah.
I was then 6 months pregnant when I began to have terrible gas and bloating after every snack and meal I ate. Never felt normal after I ate. It was usually immediately afterwards. Also had constipation that would last a couple days at a time. At the time, I thought it was normal. After all, I was pregnant. It was on my 8th month of pregnancy that I began feeling constipated for up to 4 days at a time. Holy cow. I would use a stool softener and also take gas tablets as needed throughout the day, every day. These things became habits. By the end of my pregnancy, I was up to 2 stool softeners and 2 gas tablets a day. Wow. I would avoid eating meals that would cause gas. I would just have a protein drink. I noticed that this would not cause the problems with my digestive tract, and I would be able to sleep through the night without hearing my stomach gurgle. So you, instead of eating, you switched to just having protein drinks at this point?
Yeah, I actually felt that I was no longer gaining a healthy amount of weight being pregnant. My doctor said something to me about my weight gain, and I just told her I was doing the very best I could. I also told her on a frequent basis, I think maybe, I want to say every time I did come in, I mentioned to her how awful I felt with the gas and bloating and discomfort with constipation, and she continued to tell me that it was normal for me to feel this way because I was pregnant. And I told her, well, for me to feel constipated for days at a time, that can't be normal, right? And I told my my perinatologist this because at the time I was being seen by a perinatologist because I had a history of stroke.
So
I had my first stroke when I basically was on that brink of turning 30. And then I had my second stroke when I was about 5 weeks pregnant with my son. This was during the same pregnancy with my son at this point. So I had just kind of dealt with this stage and was being followed by the perinatologist, and I was telling him I had felt this way, and he also agreed that it was normal to feel constipation, bloating, gas, and all of this discomfort. So I followed his guidance. I followed my OBGYN's guidance. And I finished the pregnancy. I just, I continued stool softeners and gas pills. And then, of course, after pregnancy and during breastfeeding, I still continued constipation, bloating, and gas. And I just felt so uncomfortable every time I ate. And the only thing that was able to help me was, you know, protein drink or a green drink or any kind of, you know, any mucilaginous, anything like chia seed drink or like a kombucha chia seed drink.
Yep.
And I was just a very clean eater. I had stopped all dairy. I had stopped all gluten. And it didn't matter what I ate. It just was terrible on my gut, just terrible pain. I never had any bleeding. I never had any kind of anything like that. But I always had, like, problems with hemorrhoids, problems like that.
Well, you did.
So,
did you have problems with hemorrhoids before the pregnancy or just during the pregnancy?
Just during the latter part of the pregnancy. And, of course, during labor, I never had any problems with hemorrhoids, so they never addressed this situation. And then, of course, after I had had my son, I just realized this was continuing to get worse and worse because I had basically kept hemorrhoids ongoing for months at a time, and it just was never getting any better. And that was when I had decided I really just need to commit and do a test for myself. And that's when I decided to do some research and take your course and actually do the testing myself.
Great. Well, you're taking it in your own hands. And it's sad that you did not get good advice while you were pregnant. I mean, especially imagine how many women like that are going through pregnancy with these imbalances and not getting any resolution.
Right.
Or the pregnancy, right. Were you having any issues with constipation?
During my pregnancy, you mean?
Or before the pregnancy.
Before my pregnancy, I didn't have any problems at all. It was about the fourth month into my pregnancy when we had moved across the country and moved into this home that had a well. And I had done some research whenever I was waiting for my testing to come back and then finally received my results from BioHealth and saw the bacteria that was on the BioHealth testing. And it's interesting that bacteria that's on there, because I'm a biologist and I do that background research, I actually found out, and this is why I added that the dairy down the street was one of our main sources for all of our dairy in our household. It was the first time I ever thought, oh, well, there's a dairy down the street. Let's go ahead and just use the dairy for all of our dairy products in our household for our daughter or for my husband. And, you know, here and there I would have a bit of ice cream because I thought that would be okay, but you know, that's something you can actually contract from a dairy, that actual bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
You can get that from a dairy farm, from beef or from an actual dairy farm. And I thought, that was the first time I had actually been to a dairy. And so it was a frequent place we stopped.
Wow. So it's looking here. So that wasn't on this test. I don't see that trichomonas. I see all of this stuff is normal. You've got Citrobacter, and then you also have E. coli. So you have E. coli 4 plus as well.
Yes.
Citrobacter. Okay. All right. Well, let's look at the other one. And let me ask you a couple more questions. So you didn't have a history of constipation. You were totally fine before that, no issues with fatigue or brain fog or joint pain, skin stuff?
I basically, during my pregnancy, was dealing with a lot of thyroid issues, but I felt that it was all concentrated on thyroid. I was dealing with extreme fatigue. They basically told me it had a lot to do with my thyroid and a lot to do with anemia, like extreme anemia. And I thought, I've never had anemia before. This is kind of odd for me. And I continued to take well over 325 milligrams of iron, and it still didn't help me.
Well, yeah, but that's going to affect that and the thyroid will cause constipation.
And, you know, they told me that. And so I kind of spread it out through the day. So I would take, like, my prenatal vitamin in the morning, and then I would take my iron in the evening. And I kind of felt like, okay, there's a little bit of, like, switch up here. And then the times that I would actually have a bowel movement, it was just straight diarrhea. And it was always diarrhea that was just, like, dysentery, just straight liquid. It was never solid. It was not anything you could ever look at on a Bristol chart that was somewhat normal.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't ever look at a Bristol chart and actually say, oh, well, okay. No, it was just liquid, like
and
like
then that
urine.
Was all with days and days of constipation. So
probably
the stool softeners and the laxatives or whatever else you were taking would have triggered open up, and then you'd go back to the constipation.
Yeah, and I mentioned that to both perinatology and to my OBGYN.
Yeah.
And they said, well, that's normal. I thought, okay, that's normal.
All right, so tell me more about the thyroid issues that you had during pregnancy.
My thyroid basically came down to I had extreme exhaustion and extreme hair loss. Like
hair loss, exhaustion, constipation.
Yeah. My hair loss was, like, in clumps. It would fall out in large clumps.
And what about labs? What did they find on labs for your thyroid?
They said to me my labs looked normal. They never changed my thyroid medication.
So you've been on thyroid medication for how long?
I've been on levothyroxine since I was, I want to say, 28.
About 5 years.
28. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the thing, too. So there's a bunch of stuff here. Plus, you had a stroke when you were 30-ish, you said?
Yeah. Yeah, I had just turned 30.
So did you get the labs, or did you take it at word from them that it was normal?
I didn't actually get my labs back. They sent it to the OBGYN at that time, and then to the perinatologist. And the perinatologist, I just trusted them.
Yeah. Right. Well, now you know better, right?
Always, I do.
Always get your labs. Always caution your clients and patients that they should always get their labs, that you own them, you keep a notebook, you keep everything in one place, because it makes it easier to go back and see, this problem seems to have started here, but when you look back at the labs, you may see that it actually started way, way before that. So clearly there's been some sort of imbalance in your system leading you to have a stroke, right? So what's going on with that is one thing I want to know. I'd love to see previous on that. Like what was your cholesterol, LDL, triglyceride ratios? What are your blood sugars like? All of that stuff, because that would tie in to increasing risk factors of throat.
It's interesting you ask that, because when they would check my blood sugar, even during pregnancy, my blood sugar was always very low. Even now, my blood sugar is, I feel pretty good even when my blood sugar is at like a 66.
That's actually a very good number for it to be at.
And I feel normal. I feel totally normal. I don't feel like I'm starving. I just feel optimal, totally clear-minded. And my blood pressure has always been extremely low. It's funny because when I have it checked, even in the dental office, they're like, are you even breathing? Mm. And it's just naturally very low.
Very low. Yeah, which is totally out of character risk factor-wise for having a stroke. You know, 20, 30-year-old,
right.
Low blood pressure, low blood sugar, having a stroke.
Right.
And
right.
The issue, the things that we want to know is why, right? They just said, oh,
right.
Well, walk it up. Who knows? But it would be really
right.
that exercise is to find out why. Like, what are the underlying things? So what I just want to point out, and I don't want to separate from you in terms of this is you, and I know this is really means a lot to you, but I also want to use
yeah.
this learning opportunity, because as we went through and spoke, you wrote a very detailed history, but as I asked questions,
yeah.
new stuff emerged, right?
Right, right.
And when you're talking to people, it's like they give you this history, you have them fill out a form, and you think you have it all, and then you start talking to them, and you find all this other
right.
stuff. And they go, oh, well, maybe that was related. You've put a lot of stuff together
right.
yourself. It seemed to have started, been a problem after this well. And is there a bug? And, you know, did you contract something there? The dairy, the
right.
raw, obviously. So you're putting things together that none of your doctors ever did, which is great.
Right.
But as you talk, as you come up with, you'll probably be saying, oh, yeah, I didn't think about that. Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that. So you're talking constantly.
Right.
And I'm thinking, well, thyroid, right? Thyroid can cause constipation. Then you say you're on 325
right.
milligrams a day of iron. Well, that definitely causes constipation. So now I'm seeing some
very
other,
true.
Right? So I'm seeing some other issues. Yeah. Is it a gut bug? Yeah, maybe. Is it, and you do have it, obviously, but is the cause of constipation more related to the thyroid issue not being under control? And if they say that you are normal, that doesn't mean
mm-hmm.
your thyroid's normal, right? So what you want to do
right.
is them and request all of your labs, any labs that they have during your pregnancy, if they have anything before, fine too, right? So get all those labs. Just get them to release.
Okay.
If they give you a hard time, you say, I understand your reluctancy to give me the labs, and they're my labs, and here's a piece of paper that says I request these labs, and you need to release them to me. It's my right. Under HIPAA law, to have
right.
my labs, and I want them, and I want them now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So sometimes you have to do that. I've had people give the people a hard time, and I've actually called up and said, "Look, you have a right under the law to give her those numbers. She already requested it. She requested it you to release them to that to her and to me." And they go, "Oh, you know, they try to bully you, right? They
yeah.
want to
see yeah."
In command, and they want you to stay in the dark. And this is what all our clients are going through, right? When they go to people,
right?
They're coming to us because they're like, help! I want somebody to listen to me. I want somebody to actually respect me. And I want somebody to actually look to figure out what's wrong. And
right. I think it took so long for me to... I think the hardest part was I was so lethargic at the time that... it was just taxing for me to, you know, get out of bed, get ready, and then to be pregnant at the same time and to deal with my 3-year-old. And it
right.
was a lot all at once. Now I feel like I have that energy. I can go and do those things.
Mm-hmm.
I know now, of course they said my thyroid numbers didn't change or fluctuate then, but I know differently. I know differently because my hair was falling out in chunks.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wonder, you know.
Well, here's the thing. First of all, most likely didn't test you for autoimmune because most of the general practitioners don't, and even OBGYNs and endos. But the thing is that if it's an autoimmune, it just that's when it gets worse, is pregnancy.
Yeah.
Right? We know that. It's a flare. So if they haven't tested you for antibodies, I'd be testing yourself for antibodies. If you can't get one of the doctors to do it, go to Direct Labs. What state do you live in?
When I had gone in to actually test myself around my doctor, just to tell him, oh, well, you had mentioned this. So I went around you and I tested myself or had myself tested through a different doctor. He kind of looked at me like, you did what? And I said, and actually I came back borderline positive, which is a positive reading for anti-cardiolipid antibody syndrome, which is actually autoimmune related. So how do you tell me I'm negative for autoimmune? He looked at me, and this was my neurologist at the time who was telling me that I had no actual reason to have a stroke or anything related to stroke. I just thought, really? I was the one trying to figure out why I would even have a stroke, and this was when they weren't treating me for a stroke, and this was a month after I had actually had a stroke. They weren't treating me still. So I went a whole month without being treated, and still I drove myself to Cleveland Clinic to be treated, and they admitted me to the hospital and kept me for a week because I was having so many issues. So it was all of these things, it's interesting, all of these things for people who aren't being treated in the way they need to be treated.
Right. Absolutely.
But I am glad that I found this out myself.
Yeah. So autoimmune, right?
It's
a good likelihood that you have some thyroid antibodies. And
yes, I have a belief that.
Really good idea to know if you had others, given that you've already had a stroke. So I would suggest you consider the Cyrex test, and I know it's expensive. It's like $500, but we'll test you for all the different antibodies because don't you want to know now, 20 years before
I would like to
destroy another part of your body, that if you have the anti-cardiolipid and there's others you may have, and maybe you have some myelin sheath antibodies, maybe you have some, you know, intrinsic factor, pancreatic islet cells, who knows what it is. But wouldn't you want to know that now? So you can take every single precaution, and then you'll have something to go back and retest to go, okay, I've done this six-month, year-long, whatever, anti-inflammatory, gut repair, autoimmune kind of a protocol. Now I want to see if it actually is helping and if I have to step it up a notch, right? So you go back. And
yes.
Months, those antibodies will be gone if you're doing all the right things, you know, and I know that. There's people who've done that. So you want to know that. I would, if I were you and I was under 30 having had a stroke. I mean, crazy.
Yeah.
How was that in relationship to your first baby? How long before or after that?
After my first child, she was only 2 when it happened.
Stroke, okay. And what was your health like before that? So here's again, I'm just going to take an educational moment. It's always important to ask to go backwards in time. And just there may be things that she didn't even know that she'll tell me. I'll go, oh, right? That was a warning sign. Right? So let's go backwards.
Yeah.
What was it like when you were a kid, a teenager? What were your periods like even? All those things play into imbalances that could be early warning signs of this.
Right. And, you know, I was never told this, but my aunt actually came to me and said, oh, I have Hashimoto's. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, I wanted to almost strangle her. Like, why didn't you say something to us? Like, I could have, you know, I'm trying to prevent this in myself.
Right.
And I deal with hypothyroidism myself. I need to prevent this in myself and prevent this for my daughter.
Right.
And it's just one of those things. I would like to test to prevent any further damage to my body. It's just hard finding a doctor to test for the right thing and finding that test to test for the right thing.
Okay. So
and, you know, before I...
You can get things tested. It's not necessarily going to get covered by your insurance, but with direct
right.
labs, if you're not in, you know, some of the handful of states that doesn't allow direct labs, you can get anything tested, and they will actually give you a super bill to submit to your insurance, and it will have a
okay.
MD sanction on it. That's from your state, so think about that. And also
okay.
any specialty tests we have set up for you guys in this program, an ability to sign up and get an account under my account and order any tests you need. So you have access
okay.
to whatever tests. Obviously, if you can get a doctor that's covered by your insurance to run them for you, that's your top priority, you know, that your top
right.
approach. But if you can't, you know, you can get any tests you need. Any tests you need,
right.
we can help you to get. So no worries on that, all right? So
yes.
Those is likely, given what 90% of all hypothyroidism is actually Hashimoto's. It's likely, given you have another autoimmune thing and you have an aunt with it. Likely.
And I thought that was only for, I guess, high, only if you had hypothyroidism that had a high dose of medication for hypothyroidism. Is that
so
true?
90% of all hypothyroidism is actually Hashimoto's.
Okay, because I've actually dealt with so many issues for hypothyroidism that are so unexplained, and I asked the endocrinologist about all of those things, and she said there's no efficacy in all of those studies surrounding that to be Hashimoto's. And I thought, well, where are your studies to say it's just hypothyroidism?
And then why do you have the hypothyroidism? We always have to look for the why. Somebody's not just
right.
born with hypothyroidism. They're born, if they have it, from whatever age you have it, there's an underlying reason. For some, it's a
right.
blood balance. We had a woman who is 50 years on thyroid medication. At 65, goes off of it because she gets her blood sugar balanced, and her antibodies normalize, her thyroid normalizes. So that was her. Some people, it's an iodine deficiency. Some people, it's the antibodies because of a leaky gut, because of heavy metals. I mean, so really going back through, like when was the last time you felt really good, like you had plenty of energy and your hair was in and you just felt like on top
of gosh, before I was 14.
Before you were 14, okay. So, again,
yeah.
now we're looking at, oh, before she was 14. So what happens at 14? Hormones, right? That's when
right.
kicks in. So there's some stuff here around that. What was happening as a kid? Were you a stressed out kid? Did you have high expectations on you for performance at school?
No, I actually didn't start my cycle till I was 16. I
okay.
Had these really odd cycles. They were all over the place. I still have them very all over the place when I deal with PCOS. So
okay. What is that related to? Do you know what that's related to from an endocrine standpoint?
PCOS, from an endocrine standpoint, I'm not sure exactly. All I know is I basically have more estrogen in my body and very little progesterone to counteract and to actually cause that equal
so
part to
dominate.
Cause a
so
cycle.
True. Less is high androgens as well, so high testosterone and or DHEA. And the underlying root has been found to be insulin resistance.
Okay.
So when a doctor diagnoses you that way, I mean, it's usually a diagnosis of exclusion. You know, you see the acne, you see the irregular cycles. Some people don't even get their cycles. Sometimes there's some facial hair, hoarseness of the voice, other masculinization-type symptoms. Checking blood
yeah,
sugars.
And I have none of that. Yeah.
Belly fat, like inability to lose weight. Sounds like you're pretty thin. And I know I saw you.
I have none of that. I have like a very even keel diet.
As opposed to dominant.
They've done the ultrasound on my ovaries and have found the like classic signs. Like the pearl beads around my ovaries. So they have actually, and I've seen it. So they said, yeah, these are classic signs, PCOS, and I just don't ovulate. And it's a total miracle. I even had my son and my daughter.
Yeah.
And I think it is all because I just changed my diet entirely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So this stuff's been happening a long time.
Right.
Yeah. And what about it?
Because I'll go 3 months without a cycle sometimes. Okay. Or at least I used to. Now it's a little more, a month, month and a half.
Yeah, so estrogen dominance, you know, there's things that can be done to help that. Did they offer you progesterone cream, Vitex? There's a whole bunch of things to bring that in balance.
Yeah, and I actually did the progesterone cream for a while, and I stopped that because it was causing some major issues, constant bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped that.
And it's getting it right. Were you on conceived?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
Were you on the progesterone cream when you conceived?
No, I actually was unable to conceive on any progesterone whatsoever. I did a bioidentical hormone treatment, and this was with a naturopath in Denver, and I just was unable to conceive whatsoever, and I just decided, you know, I just need to stop this and let my body naturally be itself, and you know, whatever happens happens. And my OBGYN said, you know, we could put you on birth control to preserve things, and I said, no, that's just adding something to this, like, you know, to the system that I don't want to add, and I don't want to add any more estrogen.
No, that'd be sad. So you didn't at all ever have birth control pills?
I did when I was a teenager, and it just made me lose a lot of hair. It caused me to become very stressed and anxious, and I had to immediately get off of it. It was just really bad for my body.
You know, birth control pills do increase the risk of stroke. That's a known.
Oh, yes.
Right, and the estrogen.
Yes.
Same thing. So that's an important piece for you to keep track of. You know, let's look at this. Let's look back further at this gut test and see what you can do. But I think that also maybe a few months down the road, get this under control and actually do like a Dutch test to see where you're at with that, and then see what you can do.
Yeah, I read into that. I would do that.
Yeah,
definitely.
I think that would be a good idea. I mean, you're at a high risk here, so because you've already had a stroke. And it's really important to understand what it all is. And also to look at your diet and look at your exposures. You know, having a well that maybe wasn't cleaned properly contaminated was a biggie, but you were still using it for showering, right? Washing dishes, washing clothes. So it wasn't like you were avoiding it because you were avoiding it for drinking. And then on top of it, the dairy. And you said you generally do dairy. Are you off of dairy again, or...
I only had that in spurts here and there during the pregnancy, and then I stopped that entirely. I actually now, I mean, I no longer have that. I think during the pregnancy I maybe did that 3 times, and I realized this is, like, not good for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then anything else that you know of that you feel like is a potential allergen for you, but that you're still eating on an irregular basis?
No. The only things that I know for sure I definitely should not have are citrus. And that I do this specific protocol for migraines because since I've had a couple strokes now, I have intense migraines all the time if I actually eat things that are aggravants to that, I will have an intense migraine. And I have actually avoided migraine medication and migraines altogether if I actually avoid these foods. And so I thought about posting these things or even interjecting yesterday during the CMDS call and saying these things. But I'll probably post that on the Facebook page for those people interested, because I really feel that's very important for those people to know those foods.
Not the usual, right? There's a certain list of migraine-inducing foods.
There's a specific list.
Others. Yeah, absolutely. So you're able to keep the migraines at bay as long as you avoid those foods.
Yeah. In fact, I cannot have citrus, like lemons. Lemons cause it instantly. I can't have lemonade or lemon juice. Unless it's like just a lemon wedge in my water, it's okay. But if it's something that's swimming in lemon juice or lemon juice on my salad or something, I can't have that. It'll be an instant migraine.
Is that even if you feel like you can have a little bit, don't.
I know. That's exactly it.
Because you don't know when you have it too close together that it's going to trigger it. Don't. If it causes it in a larger amount, it's still causing it in a smaller amount. It's just subclinic. Right? So anything at all like that, and this is true when our patients say, oh, yes, I only have it occasionally, and as long as I only have it occasionally, it can cause a problem. If they still have symptoms, which they probably do because they're coming to see you, then just stop it. Anything that in large amounts causes a problem, avoid completely until you're completely clean and completely healthy, and then you can test. The time to test things is not when you still have symptoms. The time to test is when the symptoms are gone. Then you can go back and test. Make sense?
Right.
So many cause problems that we don't even know they're causing. Okay. So so that's good. So was your birth weird? Did you have a good birth? Did you have trauma?
It was my son was, I think, 3 days late. And he just wanted to stay in there. He was happy. And then when he came, finally, he was a 20-minute labor. And it was such a smooth labor, no problems whatsoever, that they didn't even keep me in the hospital for 24 hours.
Right.
And I got to go home. And I had him literally 2 days before Christmas. And so... my daughter thought I was going to the hospital to die. So I said, you have to let me go home because my daughter thinks I'm here to die. And they said, oh, well, heck, go home. So I got to go home early.
Good. Okay, so and then when you were born, did your mom ever talk about how you were as a little kid? Did you have a lot of stuff going on? Did you have, did she have a traumatic birth?
My birth was normal. I was natural labor. I grew up having hives constantly having hives. I was allergic to bees, and I just had hay fever. And I always had migraines as a child.
Were you fed the traditional standard American diet of?
Yeah, and I always had ulcers, and I just told her I had a wheat allergy and a gluten allergy. That's really what it was, and I was showing outward signs of this my whole childhood. And literally when I found this out and I removed these things, it was like, poof, these things went away.
How long have you been off of
these? I've been off of these things for over 4 years.
And you're 100%.
Yeah, I'm 100% off of them. Even when I go to church, the wafer at church is gluten-free.
Okay. So the main symptoms that you're having right now, you're still having the constipation, right?
I don't have any more constipation. I do have occasional diarrhea.
Okay.
But it's more regular.
Okay, so much more
and,
regular. Brains are under control when you eat citrus. And have you ever done a leaky gut repair protocol?
I have, yes. And I have a green drink in my diet twice a day.
Great.
I also have a chia seed yogurt in my diet.
Kind of yogurt?
It's a dairy-free yogurt that I have made myself.
Okay. Like a nut or seed or coconut or whatever.
Yes, it's almond milk. And I have that on a daily basis to help that mucilaginous layer in my gut. And I take my normal vitamins, and I've followed the protocol that I've listed on my sheet, like the biofilm and and the, or the biophase and prophase and the Verisyn.
Their labs, is that the one that you do?
I have, like, I got the Verisyn, and I take that still, and it's actually helped quite a bit with the, like, the pain that I have when I eat. I don't have that pain anymore, and I don't have the gas and bloating anymore, which is great. I feel like I can actually go places and not have this problem. I don't feel like I have IBD anymore.
Good.
So,
so were you diagnosed with IBD?
No, but I felt like it was constant irritable bowel, just straight diarrhea all the time. And
what's
I felt at
IBD?
Times...
Make sure we use
yeah.
that. Right. IBS versus IBD. Inflammatory bowel disease, which is more like Crohn's, ulcerative colitis. Irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, would be more the alternating constipation, diarrhea, you know, that kind of stuff. So totally different. One is pathology is there. It's palpable. It's visible on an endoscope. It's visible in terms of inflammatory markers. And the other is more just inflammation, and it's usually related to food allergies and stress and all the other stuff.
So IBS. Rather...
Yeah.
I actually felt like I actually couldn't leave the house on certain occasions. Like I could not leave my home. I just felt I had to use the bathroom like all the time,
yep.
No matter
and
what.
It wasn't.
I just could not leave.
Hemorrhoid went away when the constipation went away?
It was like I didn't even know why I would get hemorrhoids if I had constant diarrhea. I wasn't pushing. It wasn't like I had any force behind anything.
So when you had the diarrhea, let me just go back and make sure this is really hemorrhoid and not, an inflammatory bowel disease. But usually we see the constipation with a hemorrhoid. And so what made you think it was a hemorrhoid? Did somebody look at it? Did you feel it? Or were you just
I just felt that. And then, of course, when I would wipe, I would have a little bit of blood.
Okay,
like,
good. A little bit of blood on when you wiped versus bleeding.
Right.
Well, got it. Okay.
Right. And it was bright. It was a bright red, so I knew that. But it wasn't anything dark. It wasn't like it'd been in, like, there for
right.
a while.
Going back to the differentiation between, say, a hemorrhoid and an inflammatory bowel disease, right, Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, you're going to see diarrhea with blood, but it's much going to be much more the blood mixed in with the watery diarrhea, as opposed to everything else looks normal, but then when you wipe, there's, you know, a little bit of blood on the paper, which is more either a fissure or a hemorrhoid. And a fissure will often happen when you are constipated and you have a big, hard stool that tries to go through, and it just presses against the opening, and it cracks it open. So that's the
yeah.
Right, versus a hemorrhoid, which is actually the varicosity of the veins around the anus.
And that's what I felt that was. It wasn't
okay.
painful to touch. It just felt uncomfortable when I would wipe.
Okay, so how long have you been on this protocol, this oregano, berberine, or earthy prophase?
It's been now a week and a half.
Week and a half, great. And this was based on your test, so let's look at your doctor's data test. So in looking at your doctor's data, you have a decent amount of this bifido, which is good. It's up at the higher end, a little bit low on the lacto. And you've got a whole bunch of commensals, right? You've got beta strep. The
mm-hmm.
citrobacter showing on both tests, right? There's the citrobacter
mm-hmm.
there. There's yeah. the citrobacter fundi there. So it's pretty clear that it's there. And it's in
yeah.
four. Now they only show it one plus here, but it's there. So
yeah,
there. So, and then the Klebsiella, which is a challenging one, and oftentimes Klebsiella will be one of those bacteria that will grow in the small intestine. So when you eat and you get immediate bloating, it could be that there's bacteria in the small intestine. The good news is some of the stuff you're doing here would help with that as well, you know, the various antimicrobials. But the other thing is, if you're no longer having, since starting this, the gas and bloating, then I wouldn't be concerned. If that does start coming back, there's other pieces, and you can look that up in the CMDS module on SIBO. There's other things you want to look at to help with the prokinetics, to help stimulate the vagus nerve. So just keeping that in mind.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
So as far as this is concerned, there are no yeast, and that's consistent with both. Microscopic yeast are rare, normal. That's not a big deal. No ova, no parasites. No Giardia, no Cryptosporidium. That's good. Pancreatic elastase is good. That's an indication of pancreatic function. Fat stain. So these are all normal muscle fibrosis. So it looks like you're digesting well. There's no inflammatory markers, which would rule out the IBD, right? If this was the Crohn's or something,
yes.
Elevated numbers here, at least one of these markers, but this is perfectly normal. But your secretory IgA is high, which means, your secretory IgA is low. And oftentimes when your body's fighting chronic food allergies or chronic bugs, the secretory IgA, it just gets used up. But also, it's going to be ineffective at helping to protect your mucous membrane against those bugs. So you're at 22.7.
Okay.
You're like half, less than half of what the low end of the normal range is. So that means your body is going to have a little difficulty in fighting this stuff off. So the things that you can do to help raise your secretory IgA, number one, heart mass, and making sure that you're doing
okay.
it before all your meals and whenever you think about it throughout the day. They've actually seen secretory IgA, they've measured it, and it responds to heart mass. It goes up, okay? So that's a really good thing.
Okay.
There's an herb called amla. It's also high in vitamin C. It's an Ayurvedic herb, amla shiitake or something like that. I don't know exactly how to say it, but it's a long word, but amla. It's really a good, helpful for the secretory IgA and helping your body replenish. Vitamin A, I mean, it's possible, you know, without your genetics, that you have a SNP that makes it hard to convert all that great juice you're taking, which has plenty of beta-carotene in it, into vitamin A. So I would just, it doesn't hurt to take vitamin A, 5,000 IUs once a day, micellized form. Seeking Health has a good one. Just take a drop of it every day, right, and help you. Maybe
okay.
For the first month, 2 drops a day, and then back it down to one, because that's really important, vitamin A, for that mucous membrane. The other thing that's really good
okay.
for that mucous membrane and the secretory IgA is vitamin B1. We talk about that in CMDS in the gut repair protocol. Like, they found that high levels, like 150 milligrams a day or 3 times a day of B1 can be very helpful in helping that to plump up and rebuild. So those are a
okay.
few things you want to do, along with the mucilaginous and all the stuff that you're already doing.
Okay.
That's the only abnormal.
We'll do that.
You know, other than the bugs, right? So your acetate,
yeah.
all those short-chain fatty acids are great. You've got a really good environment for these things. You've got pretty good normal flora. You know, the lactobacillus could go up a little, but I wouldn't mess with that right now just because I want to make sure that you don't have a small intestinal overgrowth. So I might just keep on doing what you're doing with your homemade yogurt and all to maintain that.
Okay.
Once you've finished the die-offs and you've gotten rid of some of these bugs, then maybe you can go back and increase the lactobacillus. But if you've noticed that you get bloated more when you do the lactobacillus, it probably indicates that there's still some bacteria living in your small intestine. That shouldn't be there.
Okay.
Okay. Jen?
Yeah, I definitely feel like that's...
Yeah, now what I want to do
with
your protocol, though, is I want you to do some rotating because the body gets
okay.
this stuff. So when I look at some of my other tests, and let me see if I can find a test to bring up, if I can do it without exposing somebody's name. Let's see. Who is that? Yeah, okay, I think I can find one. want to expose anybody's name, so it's going to take me just a little maneuvering to put this person's thing up on her screen. So I passed it in. Here we go. It can be showing it's in it. No, that's just a year. Let's go back to tomorrow. We did another one. The doctor's here. That's one of the. Right. Yeah, okay, I'm going to show you a sensitivity test. Yours didn't do it because you didn't have any of the, you had your normal flora that were out of balance, but I'll just show you a little bit about what this does. Let me see if I can put this in the window I'm sharing. Let me pause the screen share. I just don't want to expose somebody's name. It's just really important to me at this point. So let me here we go. Pause share. I'm pausing my share for a second. I'm going to move this particular one in there so it will go. No, it won't. Okay, so I'm just going to share it through a different screen. I'm just going to rename this. I'm going to make a copy of it. There we go. And I'm going to rename her file. I just copied her file, and I'm going to rename it. Name to stool analysis results. I'll just take her name off. Careful about people's stuff, right? Here, identity. So I've changed the name on it. I'm going to close the one that has the original name. I'm just going to open this one. And then I'm going to go to that page. And I'll just show you guys, because I want you to see what one of these sensitivities can actually look like for a particular bug that she has. So I'm going to resume share. How do I change the screen that I'm sharing? New share. There we go. I'm going to do a new share, and I'm going to do the one that says Dr. Data Stool Test. Sorry it took so long. Like I said, I want to make sure. So now you should see it's another person's doctor's data. Do you see that on the screen? Anybody? Shake your head. I can see you, Elaine. Can you see it? No? Oh, it's because it's paused. Okay, now. What about now?
Yep.
Yeah? Okay, good. Good. Yeah, so this is a yeast for her, but you know, they do this for bacteria. If they find abnormals, they do it for parasites if they find them. But they basically test that particular bug against these certain substances. So if we look at some of the substances you're taking, so oregano, if we gave her oregano, it wouldn't do her damn bit of good, right? Berberine is really low sensitivity, right? Uva ursi, she's moderate, but it's not great. I really want to give her the stuff in the green. So her protocol, the protocol you came up with, wouldn't work for her, right? So you don't really know if this protocol is going to work for you because you didn't do a sensitivity on this. So my goal
right.
would rotate you and try some of these other things. Caprylic okay. acid, you can get that as a supplement. You can also get it in MCT oil. It's very high in caprylic acid. Coconut oil is too, but Caprylic in MCT oil is much, much higher because that's what MCTs are, medium chain triglycerides. Caprylic is.
I have that.
Okay, so I would start doing that, but go slowly with it because you have bouts of diarrhea here and there. So just go really slowly, put even an eighth of a teaspoon. Let your body get used to it. Move it on up. So that could be helpful. But again, that's something you could take. It's a food. You could take it every day. But really, probably better to rotate it. Do a week on, do a week off. Do a week on, do a week off.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Same with the other things. So even if you're not sensitive, like with berberine, like maybe at one point she wasn't sensitive. She was sensitive to it, but she went and did it too much, right? Or oregano. So many people are just popping oregano like it's vitamin C, right? And the bugs get, they get resistant to it, right? Because that's what they do, antibiotic resistant, antimicrobial herb resistant as well, right? So these are things.
And I've noticed that I have to be really careful with what I take as far as berberine, oregano, and all of these things, because I've actually noticed that even berberine, out of the things that I have taken, even though these are things that are suggested as really good, their berberine gives me a really bad headache. I know there are other things that actually there are other things that are great that I could take in place of that. And berberine's at the top of this, like it's really good. I know that I actually try to just get quickly through the berberine and
find something else. You know, find something else. So, you know, do yourself in the CMDS, there should be a whole list of all the antimicrobial type herbs. You know, and just play around with them. It's easy enough with tinctures, right? You just get them and use little bits amounts and then alternate them. You know, and just find stuff that works. The virusin, is that the one that's the plant tannins, the one you're taking? Because plant tannins are an underused one. People are not overused.
Yes.
So they show up on almost everybody as being helpful. So that's a good one.
Okay.
Rotate. Okay. The biophase, the other is the seropeptidase and stuff like that, right, with their biofilm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but even with the biofilm disruptors, they usually build up to it slowly, you know, use it for a while. Stop it for a while and then start it up again.
Okay.
Okay? You know, and then foods, you know, black walnut's another one, but that's mostly for parasites, but it could be helpful. Garlic is another one, as long as you don't have a sulfur intolerance, but garlic can be very helpful. Very good antimicrobial.
Okay.
Thyme can be good. It's more viral, but it does work for some of these other things. So play around with your antimicrobials. Don't do any one for a long period of time. 5 days on, 5 days off, you know, rotate them in and out.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Keep them guessing.
We'll do that.
And keep them guessing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
Okay?
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. This was a good case, and keep us posted, you know, report back. And
I will.
And I would love to see when you get some of your other labs, if you submit those, because I'd like to see what's going on with your thyroid. I'd love to see what's going on with your blood sugar.
I will.
If you don't have hemoglobin A1C already, get that done. Get your fasting insulin, because, you know, there's stuff going on here that if we can get there and see what all your imbalances are and give you ways to correct it, it's great. Also, you know, what is your diet right now?
My diet right now, kind of interesting. I feel like I have a pretty well-rounded diet. It's very whole foods. I have a lot of nuts and seeds in my diet, and I have very few carbs. But I don't – it's not like I'm on a ketogenic diet. I have carbohydrates in the form of, like – sweet potatoes and things like that.
Yeah.
But I just don't have a lot of breads in my diet. I don't have a lot of crackers or things like that in my diet. And
that's
if
what
I
would recommend. Write down,
very
do
sparingly.
A 4-day diet diary and just keep track.
I really should.
Do it and then keep track of the bowels. Keep track of all your symptoms.
I will.
One thing you can use is in the Master Health Tracker. It's called the glucose tracker, but really it's an everything tracker. It's got a column for bowel movements and mood and energy and all that stuff. And just do that for days. And if you can do your blood sugars as well, do it. So really get a sense of what your food's doing in your body and then fine-tune it. Okay?
Okay, will do.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much.
Yes, I know you were feeling vulnerable about it, and I think it's think it's a great opportunity for everyone, and I think it's a good opportunity for you to get some good input. So, is it helpful?
Well, thank you. Yes, I learned a lot, and I think through this process, I gained a lot. I gained a lot from my clients, more like self-confidence.
Good.
So,
good.
That's good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to go back and see who has questions or comments. Or let me go to my screen that has down. I'm going to pull up my screen. Comments, just open your line and feel free to ask questions, or, you know, you can raise your hand. Sure. Hi. Do we have...
Was it estrogen dominance that's causing the problem?
Well, you know, estrogen dominance is certainly a part of her problem, yeah. You know, we don't know where her estrogen progesterone ratios are right now, and it's really hard to say without really seeing labs. Hear from a doctor, this is out of range, this is out of range, this is normal. It's like, you know, it's in the dark. So, yeah, I'm proposing that there's the estrogen progesterone ratio is a part of it. Certainly these gut bugs are part of it. Certainly the exposures, you know, it may not be coincidence that she started having these issues after having moved and, you know, the well was contaminated and then the dairy possibly. But this has been happening to her for a long time, right? The last time she felt well was when she was 14, which guess what? Was her, right? Puberty. So, there's never, you're always guessing, so to speak, you know, educated guessing, but it's somewhat guessing that you're going, okay, this could be related, but you're putting a story together. You're looking at the factors that are before it, during it, after, what makes it better, what makes it worse. So that's what I tried to see. You could hear it probably as I was asking your stuff, and suddenly some new thing would come up. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute, right? So there's a lot going on here. But, yeah, that could be a very big part of it because her problems mainly started then. But she said also she had a lot of headaches when she was a kid as well. So I think the gluten intolerance, if she were to test, she'd probably find out she is either celiac or pretty darn close, right? And so the gluten intolerance is a huge piece, right, over and over again, year after year, meal after meal after meal after meal for so many years. It's amazing. Everybody has a different tolerance, right? Some kids just say they have failure to thrive when they're 3 or 4 years old as a result, and others develop ADD when they're in middle school, and others go fine until they get to be adults, and then their whole health falls apart. And it's all different, right? And that I think, is the big part about what medicine misses, because they want to be able to put people in nice, neat boxes. They want it to be really clear-cut. Well, if this didn't happen right after that, then it couldn't have been a problem. Well, she has thyroid issues, her aunt has Hashimoto's, she has another autoimmune thing, and she got worse when she was pregnant. I mean, if that doesn't smack Hashimoto's, like what does? And a lot of times they miss those obvious things, right? They miss the subtle ones. But I remember working with a kid whose mom was diagnosed as on the spectrum. What's that thing? Not autism, but you know what I mean. My brain is offline after a long day. But Asperger's, thank you. I knew it started with an A. So he's diagnosed with Asperger's. The kid was really tiny for his age. He had been developing, and then he stopped developing. And he had some behavioral issues. So she takes him to the doctor. And failure to thrive, right? He suddenly stopped thriving. These are classic gluten intolerance. You know, especially the failure to thrive and diarrhea. That's classic celiac. But they're not looking for celiac. So they were like, you know, it's no big deal. Just a little developmental delay and, you know. The kid thrived and went back and was found to be totally normal within 2 years of going on the gluten-free diet and healing his leaky gut. So it's just sad. You know, it's sad that this happens, but this is why we want to dig. And know, you know, make sure people know you're not going to have a magic bullet answer on the first visit. That's the reason. You're kind of constantly uncover new information, it seems. Every time you speak to them and you go, oh, yeah, we didn't talk about that last time. Wow, that's a good point. So, is this helpful for everybody?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes,
good. Good. Anybody else have questions or comments or anything else you want help with? Or? Good.
Well, I can ask you a question that's completely different.
Yeah.
And I don't have reports in front of me or anything. But I went for menopause and was put on bioidentical progesterone and estrogen, and at the same time diagnosed Hashimoto's, which I didn't get on meds for that, and that's what got me to change my diet. And so that's been roughly five, almost 6 years, but yet I still haven't lost all of my weight. You know, things are still not perfect. They're great, but not perfect. And so my question is, where do I start to try to figure the rest of this puzzle out, and how do I do it when I'm on bioidentical hormones?
Well, bioidentical hormones can be perfectly fine. I would be checking your levels to make sure they're right. You know, do a Dutch test, see, and make sure that your ratios not only of the main estrogens and the progesterone, but also to make sure that your hydroxylated and methylated estrogen metabolites and all your metabolites are okay, right? To make sure you're on the right doses. And if you're estrogen dominant, that's not good. That's going to be problematic for Hashimoto's, but if your estrogen, progesterone, and all that stuff is well balanced, that's going to help you with the Hashimoto. So don't feel like that's a hindrance. It's not. That's definitely not. Only if it's out of balance. Only if you're on the wrong levels of stuff. But the other thing is, with the Hashimoto's, it's like there's always these stressors, right? There's always going to be the combination of, you know, leaky gut. Everybody with Hashimoto's or any autoimmune has a leaky gut. It's just, you know, it's just known. Some kind of stressor, like a bug. Or a stressor like a heavy metal, right? And various and sundry stressors from the outside as well. So you want to be looking at, okay, I've gotten this to this level, and now how do we get further? What's still there? It could be antioxidants out of balance. It could be specific nutrients out of balance. Perhaps if you haven't retested your antibodies, the antibodies are fine, but there's other issues going on. So when a traditional or the medical doctors look at thyroid, they typically just look at it's a supply issue. You're either making enough or you're not. If you come up low thyroid, we're going to give you more thyroid. But that's just one kind of thyroid imbalance, right? There's the conversion issue. There's the receptor resistance. There's elevations of reverse T3 that interfere. There's adrenal dysfunction, which affects the conversion of T4 to T3 and also affects the receptors. So it's looking at all those pieces. It's what's going on with your liver, right? If you have weight that doesn't want to go away, maybe your liver's protecting itself because it's stored away these toxins in the fat, and you don't have the power to release it. So sometimes looking at whether some of your genetic factors can explain it. Oh, no wonder my liver, no wonder we're holding on to fat. I've got, you know, phase one and phase two liver detox SNPs, and I'm not able to really process things. So it's looking at the whole thing, right? Looking at yourself from start to finish. Go through the seven pillars. We've given you all that information. Go through those seven pillars. There's a seven pillars evaluation that's on one of those pages. Do the seven pillars evaluation. See which of those pillars is off. That gives you a clue as to where some of your next steps would be. Maybe you're just not having enough fun in your life, right? There's a lot of, you know, a lot of little things, and it all has to come together to make that perfect storm. So the genetics and then the stressors and the bugs and the leaky gut and all that stuff comes together to cause your body to get out of whack and start making antibodies against tissue. Okay?
All right.
Yeah.
All of my thyroid numbers seem to be in the range.
The range, the ideal range. So free T3 is above 3, and So what I would be looking at is go into the module I did for consumers on thyroid. In the very last part of that, there is a book called Thyroid Balancing Step by Step. And in there, I say everybody has to assume that the receptors are shot. Because if you go and you fix this problem and that problem and you get the conversion going and you get the supply going, but you have receptor resistance, everything's going to look normal on your blood, but you still have the symptoms. So assume receptor resistance. You know, things that affect the receptors or adrenal dysfunction, things that like high homocysteine, vitamin A deficiency, right? High cytokine activity for whatever reason. All those things can be resolving. So how do you, who asked that? Susan, how do you resolve thyroid receptor issues? Well, I just gave you a few. Go into that thyroid module and you can learn more about it. But yes, vitamin A, homocysteine, high cytokines for some whatever reason that's an inflammatory marker, high or low adrenal. You have to have that Goldilocks number for adrenal because too much cortisol, not enough cortisol can affect the receptors, right? And any kind of inflammation. And there's some things in that booklet that talk about ways to help you to reverse it. But it all goes back to what are the stressors, right? What's out of balance? What are the stressors?
And where was that book?
If you go onto the site and you go to, let me just, I'll open my screen again and show you guys. All right, let me share my screen. Where's my screen? Your screen. Okay. It is. Okay. Tell me when you can see my screen.
Can?
Okay,
yes.
So if you want to see where to find that, if this was larger, you'd see it here, but on a narrower screen, the sidebar folds away, and there's just this arrow here. You can open it and see. So it'll come out. So it's on a cell phone or an iPad or whatever. But if you scroll down, I have everything, so you guys don't have everything yet, but see down here where it says VLM program, click on Vibrant Living Members homepage. You have to log in again when you get there. It's the same user ID and password, but you do have to log in again. It's going to tell you it's being redirected. Then when you get there, you're going to see a bunch of different programs on your sidebar. Not as many as you'll see for me. I've got everything, obviously. But if you go down to Thyroid Revive and Thrive, anything that has one of these little arrows means that there's a collapsible menu. So you go down to the fifth one, thyroid balancing step by step. That's the summary. Everything else describes everything, but this is like the piece, the end, the summary. Everything put together in a 30-page document. All right. So, go down to here. It's a book called Thyroid Balancing Protocols. And it goes through, so you'll see here, it goes through foundational thyroid support that everybody should do, regardless of what the cause of their thyroid problem is. It's a summary. There's more detail in the module itself. Assume and address steps. So step one is self-assessment, where are you at? And the body temperature is super important. It's one that you can tell, you know, right away what's out of balance. And then go through all your foundational things. So then assume and address thyroid resistance. So if I go there, step three, receptor resistance is common. Many people have it. Here's the leading causes of it. And you know, what you can do about it. Zinc deficiency, test for vitamin A. So it gives you all kinds of things that you can test for and do. So this booklet is gold. Gold. Right? It just summarizes everything in one place. And these are the seven things that I've chosen to write about, eight patterns, right? Primary hypothyroid, thyroid's not making enough, the pituitary or the hypothalamus isn't stimulating it properly, autoimmune, thyroid underconversion, too much of the thyroid-binding protein, which can be caused by excess estrogen. So going back to April, right, she has estrogen dominance. So she's too much estrogen. That could be causing increase in the thyroid binding globulin, which even if her numbers look good, she's binding them up, like her total numbers look good, there's too much bound and not enough free. Okay, so that's one problem. Overconversion, we don't see that oftentimes, but that's where people might be coming in and being like hyperthyroid symptoms. And maybe they alternate with hypo and hyper. They're overconverting. So they've got a low level of T4 and T3. Decreased thyroid binding globulin, oftentimes a testosterone imbalance. So someone who has a true PCOS presentation where they're showing up with elevated testosterone, they also show up with decreased thyroid binding globulin, and that could trigger, again, more free hormones and less of the bound, and that could stimulate a hyperthyroid condition. And a lot of people, I just wonder how many people who show up and have symptoms of hyperthyroid have their thyroid ablated when there may be some chemical thing like this, like too much testosterone, right? So it's just when you know these things, you can help people dramatically improve the quality of their care, and then the thyroid receptor is. Okay? Does that help? Yep.
Certainly. You totally helped me.
Okay, good. Fantastic. Fantastic.
I was saying on the chat, I wish I could read faster so I could just read all of this right now.
I know, right? That's that little USB thing we want to stick in your ear, right?
It's unfortunate that we have to sleep, you know?
Oh, I always feel that way, too. It's like, why do I have to sleep? That's a waste of time. I have all this stuff to learn. Yeah. I was doing a presentation today on a summit. It's the gut summit that's coming out soon. Summer Bach, one of my friends, is doing. And I'm talking about gut hormones. So she's like, what can you talk about that other people aren't talking about? I said, I bet nobody's talking about gut hormones. It's like, whoa. And she thought I meant like leptin and ghrelin, and she's like, you know, and she had given me some questions she was going to ask. I said, well, you're not getting to the heart of it. Let's ask these other questions. So we start talking, and her eyes are like saucers. It's like, wow, I never knew that. Oh, my God, I never knew that. Oh, GLP and GIP and how they affect insulin and how, you know, then, So that's all in PMDS, by the way. It's all in PMDS. But it was basically, you know, stuff that the public isn't really hearing about. And I had so much fun because I went, let me just see what other research there is lately on GLP and GIP. And if you don't know what those are, go back into that module, and so you'll get to it in PMDS, because I have a whole module on, it's like an hour and a half on gut hormones. So you get way more details than people. But anyway, I had so much fun. It's like, oh, I want to learn this. Oh, I want to read that article. Oh. But we can't. We can't read it all. So we have to just go for the. Let's see, chat. Is there anything on the chat that I need to know about? Where's the chat? Chat, there we go. Anyway, this is probably that was you that I know. Lynn will be happy about that. I don't know what that was. She put up the seeking help. That's the vitamin A I use. Instead of taking back, because I have that SNP, instead of taking it every day, what I do is I take like 5 drops, of, you know, once or twice a week. There's 3 drops or whatever I feel like I want to take, so I don't have to open the thing up every day, because I keep it in the fridge. I keep my liposomals and my micellized in the fridge, so it's not as easy to grab it. Beverly says, helpful as usual. Susan, adrenals, insulin resistance, how do you, and we talked about that. Gosh, I wish I was a speed reader. Yeah, I like it. All right. Anybody else? Last chance for questions. Anybody on the if you're on the phone, you can raise your hand with the *2 because you can't open your mic without me opening it for you. So *2 raises your hand. I see Valerie and backup pin, which I think was backup pin. Oh, that one. Yeah. Anybody? Quiet. All right. I'm gonna.
Confused about my daughter's lab work that she had with the thyroid.
Yep.
All I had is just her TSH is within norm 1.9, but she has a low free T4 mm-hmm. at 0.71, and her free T3 is at 2.7.
Yeah, so they're both low. So her frees are low. I'd want to see her total T4 to know, but given her TSH is 1.9, it's, you know, that's a good number, and they say nothing's wrong with her, right? Because they'd never go further
right.
and test. So both of her frees are low, which to me says possibly excess thyroid binding globulin. How old is your daughter?
17. That's the one that has the autoimmune, and she's got Epstein-Barr right now, and influenza. Both of them came up high right now.
Does she have any issues with her periods, her cycles? And
normal cycles, but heavy periods and painful.
Yeah, well, it's possible that she has excess estrogen or estrogen dominance. That we
see. Yes, estrogen dominance for sure.
Okay, so that's something to work on, okay? Because that's affecting her thyroid. Excess estrogen, too much of the thyroid binding globulin, so she's probably got plenty of the total hormone. That's why the TSH is normal, because it's reading and going, oh, there's plenty, we don't have to do anything, because it's right, there's no more supply needed. So putting her on Synthroid isn't going to help. If you're going to put her on anything, you'd put her on free T3. But I wouldn't. I would be looking at how do you solve the estrogen dominance. And there's a number of ways. I mean, we don't have time to go into it all tonight, but do a search on it. I mean, there's things like dim and broccoli sprouts to help the ratios and actually will help bring it down. You know, Vitex, if the progesterone is low and the estrogen is high, so Vitex might be something to help her, and it might help her periods. Things like that, or progesterone itself.
Yeah, she just started to take progesterone compounded, and I take them, and I was always wondering if I should start giving her them because I know she's estrogen dominant.
Yeah, but do some things to try to bring the estrogen down a little bit, because if the estrogen's high and you bring the progesterone up high, she's no longer estrogen dominant, but she still has too much estrogen, and that's still going to bind cause more thyroid binding globulin, right? So the ratio might be better, and she may be safer when it comes to, you know, estrogen-sensitive problems, but it's still not going to affect the thyroid, so that would be something I'd be looking at.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. These are good questions. And the more you learn about this stuff, the more it'll come to you when you hear it, but just be patient, because I've been doing this for 30 years, so there's 30 years of knowledge in my head. Right? So you're not going to get this overnight. I'm trying to simplify it down, make it as easy as possible for you to get it. But, you know, be patient with yourself. Go through the stuff. Master what you do. Take the test at the end of the modules and then move on to the next one and then move on to the next one. You know, and these calls get us, like, the more advanced stuff or the cases or the practical. But you'll learn. There's a module about everything we talk about. There's a whole, you know, practitioner module on thyroid in addition to the one you have on the client site. But we decided to open up the client programs to you so you'd have a head start. You can learn it from the client perspective, and then you can go even deeper when we do it from the practitioner perspective. We'll get a lot more labs. Okay? Good? All right. I'm going to unmute everybody so we could all say goodbye. Let's see. Public. Hi, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Bye, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.